And welcome to the Rock and Roll Survivors Podcast, dedicated to those in front of the curtain, behind the curtain, and somewhere in between. So let's get started.
Well, I am thrilled, Michael Quattro, that you are joining your sister, Patty, and me to fill in a lot of gaps from season two, where we talked about your extraordinary musical family growing up in Detroit. And Mike, we sang your praises throughout, but I'm just thrilled that we get to have you tell us some in-between stories, some insider stories, and to, I don't know, make it come alive for us. So welcome, Mike.
Hello.
So let's just go back to the beginning. You were a prodigy, are a prodigy on the piano. How did you come to play the piano? I know you come from a musical family, but were you just immediately drawn to the keys?
I started noodling on the piano when I was 5 years old. We had a nice Baldwin Acrosonic at the house. And of course, my dad played about three different keyboard instruments, but my dad started to play on the violin when he was in high school, and then he taught himself keyboards. Anyway, so I started to noodle around, and when I got to be about seven, I was able to make an appearance with the Detroit Symphony, like Mozart did at seven. Same thing. And well, Mozart played with the symphony, his first symphony performance, when he was seven. When I got to be about nine, I was able to play Beethoven Pathétique, which is one of the hardest piano play pieces in the world. It requires great skill. And then when I was about 10, I think 9 or 10, I played my first date with my father's band, at the Gros Point Yacht Club was the first one, because he was the house band there. And then
Mike, you're overwhelming me with all of this. I love it. We have so many things to unpack here. So let's just go back for a second. You started noodling on the keys when you were five, which is extraordinary. And then you were discovered by, or you were introduced to, Misha Kotler. Could you tell the listeners who Misha Kotler is?
The Misha Kotler thing came after Ben Detson Netzord, who was a big piano teacher in Detroit. It had a lady, Edith Ella Davis, who gave me some piano instructions at 8 or 9, and I think it was around 10, my dad or somebody discovered Misha Kotler, who was the Russian, and his wife was a pianist, also Russian. And he came to Detroit from Russia, and he had studied under Rachmaninoff. Good God, what a heritage. And he became the Detroit Symphony concert pianist and a teacher. So we went over to Misha Kotler's house on Chicago. He had 2 9-foot Steinways in his back room. And he said, show me, he said, play. So I played, all agog with how good I could play at my age, typical me. And
were you nervous when he said play?
No, I've been nervous only when I do a public performance. Like, you should, if you're not nervous when you do a public performance on TV or anything else, then you shouldn't do it. I mean, you're going to be anxious and anxiety and everything. Sometimes when you're middle, and then your nervousness disappears when you actually start, just like an Olympic event, you got to be a little anticipation. So anyway, so I'm playing all agog with, how good I'm showing him how I am. And he waited about 3 minutes for me to get through this and that. Then he said, keep playing. And he walked over, had a ruler in his hand. And he slapped this finger, that finger, this finger, that finger. He said, this is wrong, this is wrong, this is wrong. Ha! I said, oh. And he said, I can teach you, and you can be one of the best in the world. And I said, oh, okay. And then he sat down and played. And I said, oh, all right. I can be that good, eh? Yeah, he was the master. Yeah.
That's phenomenal. I believe he was Ukrainian, Russian.
He might have been Ukrainian Russian. But if you look it up, and Google up Misha Kotler, it'll tell you.
I did. That's
I Googled. I just happened to Google him up a day ago. I just wanted to see when he died. The last time I saw Misha Kotler, I was playing at the Southfield Civic Center, and I had, I think, Connie Coquette, I think, was the singer with, or it might have been the German girl, the girl from Claudia Hoffman, the girl from Nuremberg. Boy, could she sing. She was a hysteric. I was engaged to her for, I think, 2 years, but I couldn't take the hysteria anymore. So I didn't get married to her, but she was a great singer. And we were doing a concert at the Southfield Civic Center with the, the Norwegian Symphony Orchestra? And they played first. They opened for me. And as usual, because they didn't know any better, they started to walk out after their part of the concert, and Misha Kotler walked in the back door of the concert and sat down. Well, they all came back and sat down. And then, of course, I started my show where I stand. You know, I don't sit. I stand. And you could see there, oh, this fucking guy knows how to play. I remember that. Anyway, that's the last time I saw Misha Kotler. I think he died in 81. I think he passed away in 81.
One thing I found really interesting, another connection between you and Misha Kotler, was that he too was a child prodigy. And I believe it was Rachmaninoff who discovered him.
That probably is absolutely true.
And then Misha discovers Michael Quattro. So one thing that Patty and I talked about in season two, and Patty, you can fill this out a little bit more, is that your sister Arlene, who is the oldest of the Quattro family, had told you, Patty, that your brother was bullied as a kid because of carrying a music satchel. Mike, is that true? Do you remember that?
No, I was always, when I say bullied, I was bullied by verbally sometimes by, you know, kids in school. But I never took being bullied so physically, just verbally, you know, this snide remark, that snide remark. Because, you know, I went to school with kids from Grosse Pointe, rich kids. That's what all Grosse Pointe was at that time, rich kids who were spoiled and didn't like anything out of the ordinary. I mean, it was when I was in high school, I wasn't a Grease. I wasn't a Soche. I wasn't an athlete enough that way that I was, you know, winning the 100-yard dash or playing in football. I was doing other sports, which included racing go-karts. And I started racing go-karts when I was 13. Anyway, it was fine. Maybe. I remember the only fight
You know, Arlene, when she told me that, it was weird because I didn't know what she meant. She said you were bullied, like you had your satchel or after school or something, like walking home. She said they used to tease you or something. So that didn't happen, or you don't remember it? Because that's what she told me.
The satchel story, I carried a satchel to school, you know, because I was, if you remember, Patty, I was always, from the age of 9, I'd be playing a concert at some mansion on Lakeshore Boulevard. And they'd have to have a tutor there. And one of my favorite pictures that I'll try to find for you is I'm playing in New York at some event. It wasn't Carnegie Hall. It was, and Leonard Bernstein was going to play with me with the symphony, and we were doing a rehearsal. It wasn't Carnegie Hall. It was another venue. And we're doing a rehearsal. And I got a picture somewhere. I got to find it. From behind me, and you can see Leonard Bernstein, and you can see me with my back, and I'm looking at what should be sheet music for what I was going to play, classical, only it's a comic book. Because I had already memorized my part. That's a great picture. So I got to find that picture.
I hope you can find that picture, but that brings something up that Patty and I both talked about, which is, you were such a prodigy, and you were so able to, I mean, you were a genius. You were a phenom, as they say. So you did remember all of this music. And so by the time you would play, it would, like you said, it would look like sheet music, but you were really reading your comics.
Oh, we had a comic book collection. You had a huge collection. You were so into the comics.
I did. Yeah,
money. Did you sell them someday, or do you still have them? You had a stacks of them.
The comic book collection has to do with Walt Disney comics, Donald Duck, Uncle Scrooge, Donald Duck and the Three Kids, etc. And the particular guy that did it all was the name of Carl Barks. It was fabulous. When you read a Donald Duck or Uncle Scrooge, you got learning, you got moral code, you got comedy, but you got moral code all the time. There was always a message, like he's a bad guy, all right, but he's turned good. And Uncle Scrooge would say, bad guys never turn good. Things like that, things that you learned. I had all there are, I don't know, 300 issues of Donald Duck, Uncle Scrooge. I had them all. And yeah, that collection, I eventually gave that to Dick Kuhn in around 1981 for his archives. And I was able to still, you know, whenever I wanted to read one, I could read it. I love those comics. They're the best. Spider-Man or Marvel or all that stuff. I'll read that comic book. But it was Walt Disney, Carl Barks, Donald Duck, Uncle Scrooge, Daisy Duck, you know, et cetera.
Temper, temper, shame on you. You never see me lose my temper, do you?
No.
Well, I'm not going out with you again until you cure that temper.
Oh, Daisy, I'm sorry. Please.
Go.
So a couple of things on your love of comic books and being a kid while you're playing these extraordinary events. At the end of 12th Street Rag, or at some point on Lawrence Welk, your fingers are flying all over, there's this one part, and forgive me, it's a little early still, but you go, da, 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 da.
I did that. I had to do that. That was the way to end the song. 12th Street Rag was a terrific number. I think it was maybe my third solo on the Top Tunes. By the way, the show was called Top Tunes and New Talent. It wasn't called Lawrence Welk. It was called Top Tunes and New Talent.
Wow. I didn't know that.
Now you know that. The Saturday show was Lawrence Welk. The Wednesday show was Top Tunes and New Talent.
Wow.
Featuring Lawrence Welk, you know. Oh,
that
yeah.
I didn't know, and I did remember the main show was on a Saturday. So yours was a different day.
It was Wednesday. Wednesday night between 9 and 10 on ABC Network, little Michael Quattro was playing to 130 countries.
That's okay. So hold that thought, Mike, because I have a couple questions leading up to Lawrence Welk and how this happened.
All right.
First of all, Patty, and I tease her, and I, of course, now use it as well, but Patty refers to the music that your dad played and that you played in the trio, and your little sister Susie on bongos at the age of 7. Patty calls it the dot-dee-dot music, but you
call it... That's what I called it. Yeah.
I thought you said...
Dee-dee-dee-da-da.
Dee-dee-dee-da-da
music. Just like in The Godfather, when they wanted to know what that bad guy that was trying to kill the Godfather, and he said, what did he say?
Well, So how did it come to pass that you start playing as a kid with your dad? Obviously, you're talented, but
because I noodled around, you know, with popular songs. And so he just brought me along and I played.
And did you sing as well?
Pardon?
Did you sing as well or do any kind of vocal?
I didn't sing. I didn't sing until I was around, 17, 18. I ignored the singing part of my career until then.
And how were you received when you were playing at these clubs with your dad? And you're fabulous, but you're a kid and Susie's younger than you are on bongos. Were you seen as a novelty? What was the reception?
No, I was seen as, oh my God, look at this. You know, all the people in the dining room at the Gros Point Yacht Club, which I played many times. See, my dad played the Gros Point Yacht Club like three times a week with some band and, or at a private party or at Henry Ford's daughter's debut party at the country club, you name it. I did everything. I played everywhere then. And then somewhere along the way, Mrs. Slocum heard me. It was sure at the Gros Point Yacht Club. She was the wife of the owner who had died of Automotive News. The biggest, it's like doing something for Life magazine. Okay. It was important. And she wanted me, she paid for the Misha Kotler lessons, et cetera, et cetera. And as a result of me playing somewhere, the chairman of the board of Chrysler heard me play and said, I'm sending you to Hollywood. You need to audition for this ABC show that we sponsor. Chrysler sponsored Top Tunes and New Talent. They sponsored the show. So they sent me there to audition, and of course, they hired me. I came back to Detroit, and they waited about 3 months, and then they started putting the little band together to be on Top Tunes and New Talent, and for me to do solos. And the little band included the Mouseketeer drummer. I forget his name.
Cubby O'Brien.
Cubby O'Brien. he could play good drums. He wasn't bad. The rest of the band, and Pee Wee Spittle Arrow on clarinet, which was like Benny Goodman. God, he was good. And a trumpet player from New Orleans. And then, of course, during the show, I did play with the Lemon. I called them the Lemon Sisters, of course. About once every 3 weeks, I'd do a number with them. And about every 4 weeks, I'd do a number with Pete Fountain, one of the greatest clarinetists of all time. So, and of course, I got to appear with the movie starlets who would come in. I think I told you this. They'd come in. Well, we're in the movies. You know, of course, I would try to date every one of them. And if they gave me an attitude and they say, well, we're in the movies, you're on TV. I said, listen, are you kidding me? I'll have more people see me tonight than in all the movie theaters in the whole year in the movies. Okay. Just tonight. That's how many people watch the TV.
You know, I'm confused about something that you said about this Top Tunes or whatever on Wednesday night.
Yep.
Whenever I saw the junior band, didn't they play?
Yeah, the junior band, yeah.
Didn't they play on the Lawrence Welk show?
They never played on Saturday. It was a Wednesday night thing.
Wow, I never knew that.
And I never appeared on Saturday either. I was a Wednesday night star.
Okay.
Interesting. I also had no idea that it was Mrs. Slocum. We have to really honor this lady for helping you with in your career early on, Mike, that she paid for your piano lessons with Misha Kotler.
Yes, she did. She did. She paid for Misha Kotler. And the chairman of the board of Chrysler was a friend of hers. And again, when he heard me play, that was it. He said, you're going to California. You're going to Hollywood.